because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Button pressed.
Your hair looks good this morning.
Well, I splashed some water on it and here we are.
No way, that's just water. That's got to have some product in it.
No product.
Wow, dude. Is that just just grease? Have you not showered?
It's grease from my sleep. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Little sleep grease. A little sleep grease is good for it. Hey, Prof.
Hi.
Hi.
What's that?
I don't think your headphones work.
Oh, my headphones weren't working? Oh, okay.
Just living the dream, Adam.
Yeah, 7:40 a.m. are f***ed up once or twice. So, you know, here we are. God dang.
It's going to only get better from here, man.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. yeah, not staged, not planned at all. Just a standard.
This is life, baby. This is
early,
life.
You know, somewhat newborn relationship trials and tribulations. So, yeah.
Welcome to the inside.
Yeah. So, Robert, you played a little, I wouldn't even call it a light money ball. I think
it was a very heavy money ball.
Yeah, a lot of times I consider a money ball light. This was far from it. Tell me about kind of why it was put on and some of the teams involved and the day that you had.
Yeah, so it was in Lakeland, Florida yesterday, Tuesday, October 24th. And it was a good purse. It was 25K to the men, 25K to the women, a one day just gender only event. It was put on at Lone Palm Country Club. And it's basically they're christening some new courts and they just wanted to put an event together for the members, have a bunch of good players come and put on a show. And they were just like, you know, we'll just pay cash. You know, they literally had like 50 grand in cash there. You know, it's a lot of cash to be laying around, but they did it. And had a bunch of good teams. So yeah, JW, Dylan, you had Rettenmeyer, Ignatowicz, you had Federico Pablo, you had Rafi Hewitt, Zane Navratil, Andre and I played. It's a heavy, heavy stack draw, and it was good to have like a mix of the PPA APP players, right? Like Ryler DeHart and Richard Livernese also played, and they came up with fourth, lost a tight one to Ignatowicz and Rettenmeyer in the bronze. So it's kind of interesting to see the parity where like the margins out there are slimmer than I think people realize, even between the APP PPA. I mean, obviously the PPA is much more top heavy, but margins are small nowadays. On the women's side, you had also great teams. You had the Orlando Squeeze combo of Anna Bright and Rachel Rohrabacher. They won the thing. They beat Megan Fudge, Susanna Barr in the final. Who else do we have? We had Leia Jansen, Hurricane Tyra Black. I think they got bronze. Andrea Coop played with Yana Newell. Like just good teams. A lot of good teams for a random money ball on a Tuesday in Florida, you know?
What kind of format? Just standard? Was it any like round robin-ish or was it just straight up draw or what?
Yeah, it was just a straight up draw. They had a qualifier that was like a round robin. Dom Catalano just fell just short of qualifying. Lost 15-13 in the decider. So it didn't make the main.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that guy, he's got the best head high blocks in the game. There's no question about it. He gets that high ball, just carve that thing. Just carve that thing head high. We're not releasing on that ball. We're not putting it away. Let's go, Dom.
Playing with that Lux too, man.
Oh yeah, I got the demo for that. It's pretty, man. It's thick. It's thick.
It's thick.
And, you were playing with it as well. You were playing with it as well. So Robert, I remember we talked about you playing this thing, but of course I didn't remember. I got a lot going on, so I pulled up the old internet and I pulled up the match at 4-4 in the third. You and Andre versus the kids, and then I watched it from there on out. Man, I mean that's a battle. Right there, I think it ended up being 13-11 or 14-12 in the third. Either way, how did that match go with the Young Bucks?
That's a heartbreaker. Had plenty of opportunity, I had many match points to close it out and just couldn't do it. But with good teams like that, you gotta step on their throat, and we didn't. So yeah. I think we were up 10-6. We were up 10-6. I think we were up 10-8. Had some points on our serve. I just couldn't close it out. And of course, like if you leave the door cracked a millimeter open, they're gonna be tough to beat. So when you get a chance to beat them, you got to beat them. And unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. But I think overall, we had a pretty good day. We beat Rafa Hewitt, Zane Navratil. We beat Martin Emrich and Christian Alshon had a good win over Ignatowicz and Rettenmeier in three. Mm-hmm. So we ended up playing Alshon and Martin, and we beat them in the semis to play J-Dub Dillon in the finals. And it was funny, dude. You know Eddie Anderson?
Like, is that Eddie and Webby?
No, Eddie's a guy. Eddie. Okay. Eddie's a guy in Florida that has he put on a pro-am, played some senior pro, but really, really good dude. And he told me about this money ball in the first place. And he was like, man, Julie Johnson came up to me and she just could not believe that because Andre and I were the two seed. She was like, I just cannot believe that they're the two seed over Federico and Pablo, who I think got the three seed. And so I went up to Julie just to give her a little ribbing. I was like, Julie, what do you mean? You don't think we deserve the two seed? She's like, oh, but just Federico and Pablo are so good. And I'm like, yeah, they are. They're very good. But we also beat them the only time we played them and we didn't play well. So I was just giving her a hard time. And then I was like, man, it would just be a cherry on top if we just beat Peter Kidd, you know, that would just be so good.
And man, it
missed
it. It hurts. It hurts because I think that Andre played very well to get to 10-6 and those long extended dink rallies. He was the one that was using his reach to kind of poke and start the fire. He unfortunately missed a couple balls down the stretch, but I also saw, of course, not the kids playing poorly, but I saw several high balls that they missed, kind of shoulder or head high towards the end of that match. And believe me, I have been between the lines plenty, and I know when your opponent, especially a quality opponent, gives you those opportunities, it always hurts a little bit to not capitalize. But hey, I mean, 13-11 and a third against a team like that who has been, you know, frequenting Championship Sundays is a pretty dang good result. So congratulations to you and Andre and a great job to just let everybody know, hey, we're playing on the APP tour. We're having some nice success over there. Everyone wants to talk PPA, but we're right in the mix as well. And I think that the scores obviously showed that.
Yeah. I think I said it before. I think Andre and I are top five PPA team. And I mean, I think that validates it to some extent.
Right, definitely. And tell me again, like, okay, so was there a person or a company behind this, or it was just the opening party?
It was the family behind Publix that owns.
Oh, okay. I see.
I'm not sure all of the connections. But Graham from the Florida Smash helped put it on. It was such a great event. If they do this thing every year, like it's a must go to. And you know, honestly, the best part about it is you go and you only play men's. It's perfect. It's perfect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been lobbying for that for quite a while now. Yeah, so.
Just tournaments with just men's. This is the dream. And I know I joke around with Fed about that a fair amount. He's like, dude, 3 days of men's would be like an absolute dream.
It would be. That's nice to know that Alshon beat Ignatowicz. I know they have like a friendly, not friendly rivalry. So nice job from Alshon there. With probably a weaker partner. So that's funny. And also, I mean, you brought up Julie Johnson. I was having a funny conversation with her the other day. I'm a new father. And so we talked about some of the things that Jack Johnson would do for JW in Georgia. Like he was like tying balls to ceiling fans. Like early on. And so we had a pretty funny conversation about that. Julie was like kind of mapping out the hand-eye coordination stuff I'm going to do for AJ as they did the same stuff for Georgia and J-Dub, and obviously worked out pretty well because the hand speed is there. But I thought that was a pretty funny conversation we had.
No, that's hilarious. I remember Goldberg initially told me about some of that stuff, like tying the ball to the ceiling and then just hitting. Yeah. It's good stuff.
You got to start early.
I'm like, is this real? This can't be a real story. This is a real thing. This is real. Yeah, sure.
It's real.
Hey, I mean, pay dividends.
I mean, little baby AJ is top percentile in everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if he has that natural ability, we might as well, you know, keep that going and start those drills early, you know?
Might as well.
So, okay, what do we got here? So we had a little, just maybe a little information about some of the MLP PPA stuff. It's been kind of dragging on for a couple weeks now. Not any huge news coming out, but the schedule, just some of the things that we're hearing is that there's going to be some piggybacking events of MLP and PPA, and there's also going to be a handful of standalone events as well. Yeah. And I know this is pretty bare bones stuff, and not some of the specifics we were hoping for, but I do believe that the plan is to get a schedule out in the next week or two. So what do you think about that little bit of information that we have on the schedule and how it's going to look for 2024?
Yeah, it seems to continue to fluctuate, but it sounds like it's going to be kind of like a 70-30 split. PPA to MLP events is kind of what I've heard. I know they initially wanted like 50-50, but I don't think that's happening. So it's going to be a little bit more PPA heavy in terms of tournaments versus team, it seems like. And there's so much to figure. We always talk about this. It's like end of October and there's so much to figure out and there's so little time to do it. Like talking about the schedule, right? And the whole pro landscape as is like you have MLP, PPA, which, you know, will probably be close to a combined 25 to 30 events for these players. You obviously have the APP that are running events and signature events, and they're trying to grow the game. You know, they're powering international events. They're doing collegiate stuff now. They've got a partnership that's going to be kind of more formed with Universal Tennis. UTR Sports now is kind of the updated name as they kind of venture into pickleball and other paddle sports moving forward potentially. There's going to be a lot of pickleball next year. And it'll be, you know, I'd still like to play some APPs. They've been good to me this year. And obviously it's fun to win. So I'd like to play more APPs next year if I can. But it'll all hinge on the schedule. And I think just from the viability of the league and the merger and all that that's happening is they've got to recoup a lot of costs, right? Their expenses are high. It costs a lot to run these events. They're going to, you know, I think the PPA partnership, the merge will help kind of lessen those costs a little bit as they can kind of use some of the built-in PPA infrastructure, you know, probably use the same video boards and all of that stuff that they were having to rent this year. That's very expensive. They'll be able to combine that and save some costs there. But you know, there have been talks about trying to get players to drop or lower some of their, you know, first year salaries for more upside and, you know, kind of on the tail end. But, you know, I think that's going to be a tough ask for, I don't know, pickleball, man. It's like, we all kind of think maybe this is a flash in the pan in terms of the pro. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, so sooner is better to get paid in any right. instance. That's for so sure.
And the argument from, you know, the MLP, you know, the owner side is, hey, well, if you want to get paid in 2025 and 2026, like the league still has to be around, right? And if, you know, if we're not able to cut some costs in the first year, there's no guarantee we'll be around. But on the other hand, it's like, you know, even if we do cut costs in the first year and we do drop player salaries and we do try to make it more of a viable long-term business, you know, who's to say that it won't fail anyways? So it's a tough spot for the player to say, no, I'll take more money on the back end when, you know, they're so pot committed and so deep in already.
Yeah, it's a little bit different than you know, backloading a contract in Major League Baseball to get under the salary cap, a little more established yeah. league. So I think it's similar situation, but yeah. And I know they're going to be running these next two MLP events, a little bit under budget with what they were before. And you know, I think, like you said, like the video boards and the multiple trucks that have to go to yeah. these tournament stops, like you just don't think about everything that goes into it. So I think it was pretty clear that PPA was running their tour more efficiently than the MLP was. And yeah, so it's, you know, all those numbers, all those logistics, it just takes a while to add it all up and find that perfect recipe. But yeah, so I mean, I personally, I'm repping the Hard Eights as always. We have a very solid team. We won event number one, but I'm just kind of thinking, if it's October, like you said, and 2024 is such a pivotal year, could they possibly trim the fat and just cancel San Clemente or the last one? I don't believe that they're going to do that at Dallas, but I mean, that's a lot of manpower, brain power to put on event. Let's put that into just making sure 2024 is as good as possible. Does that make sense to you?
100%, dude. And I actually think that's probably the best play. I thought even, you know, canceling Dallas would probably make a lot of sense in terms of just cutting costs, right? Like if these events cost $2 million to put on, just two and a half, whatever it may be, just keep that money in the bank, put it towards next year. You're already in a sizable hole next year. Let's like, you know, this year we're not really playing for anything, right? So it's like there's nothing on the line really for the owners or for the players per se, other than some extra prize money, that kind of thing. So it's just like, cut the cost. Let's get everything extremely organized. Let's figure out what, if it's going to be a draft or a free agency, let's figure out the schedule. Let's just get super organized at the tail end of 2023 so we can like hit the ground running in 2024. I mean, there's still all the player contracts that have to be figured out too, right? Because I still have an MLP contract that says nothing about PPA or any new entity, or, and same with the PPA players. They sign PPA contracts with nothing, not just nothing saying, but like with the contract being written as, you know, the competing tour being kind of, you know, enemy number one. So it's like now we're playing both, and the contracts are written in such a way that it's like trying to avoid the other tour or the other league. So I don't know, man, there's a lot to figure out, and I totally agree. I think there's a real chance that San Clemente could get canceled, and I'm just saying that not based on anything I've heard from anybody, but based on just pure economics. To me, it makes sense. But who knows?
Well, still, I don't know why I thought about this when you were just talking about the AVP, but still my favorite meme of the whole thing is, it's like Apollo Anton Ono, the speed track skater. And it's just MLP and PPA, and they're like jockeying for position. They run into each other and fall. And then Ken Herman comes through from like, you know, 10 spots back and ends up winning the tournament. And it's just hilarious to me. I don't know why, but hilarious.
And but dude, honestly, like, you know, you got to give the APP credit. I mean, they're just chugging along and they're running a pretty financially responsible business right now. Not overextending, being pretty smart with their expenses, and also providing a great tournament experience for amateurs. So, hey, just dude, the little engine that could, man.
Yeah.
Just plugging along.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be clear, guys, like everyone wants to go to a great event. Everyone wants perks and whatever else, but you just have to think about it a little bit more long-term and at a deeper level. You have to trim a little fat and not get something that is not necessary, more a luxury item at here and there at a tournament and whatever. Like, you just have to understand this is a business. These tours are running to make money and provide something for you. You can't expect it to just, you know, be amazing or over the top. It doesn't work that way. It's not sustainable when that happens. So you have to keep the big picture in mind when you're thinking about these things. Otherwise, it's just not realistic and not real.
Yeah. And I think honestly, the only, I think the only way that like this MLP PPA thing ends up well is if there's some large media rights deal that comes out of it. And that's hard to see right now with the viewership we have, right? So I think, you know, we always talk about it. Everybody talks about it, is viewership's the main issue. Like nobody's watching. And I always say nobody, but nobody's watching. Nobody. They aren't. They just aren't.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's almost like this, the companies are nice and kind of keep it afloat, but you need something substantial in terms of a media rights deal. I mean, this is what the big three sports franchises, that's what they get. They get these Texas media rights deal or something along those lines that really is the lifeblood of what's keeping it going. And all the other little, not little, but all the other sponsors are just kind of, you know, a supplement to that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Nobody's watching, and nobody's watching.
Nobody.
Couple grand. That's it.
So is it betting? Is it turning it into Savannah Bananas, Banana Ball? What's gonna get it over the top? Because something's obviously just like the status quo of what's happening now, even with MLP, right? Like, I think MLP is the most exciting format. I can sit there and watch match after match after match all day without getting bored, but obviously it's not moving the needle for the casual fan, right? So what's gonna be the tipping point? Not even the tipping point. What's gonna get like even the water like lukewarm? Not even like just how can we go from cold to lukewarm?
Yeah, and I really don't know anything about the numbers and where you need to get to on a stream to make it profitable and this and that or whatever. And I don't know the numbers once it goes on to ESPN Plus, CBS Sports, ESPN2, whatever it's going to. But I do know the live stream numbers, and I always compare it to poker. And I know that these poker live stream numbers and what they get to make it kind of worth it. And it's not that there's huge numbers in poker, but pickleball's not there yet to get to that point. And yeah, like you said, we can watch back to back. We know the players, we know the situation, we're in the mix. How can we get a casual person, or maybe even less so, to want to jump into that warm pickleball water that we love so much? I just don't know the answer.
We'll get into this because we're gonna have a little cameo guest appearance today from my buddy Yuvi, but was just in India, and there's a company there called Global Sports, and one of the partners' name is Shashank, and he was at the English Open, met him there for the first time, but then got to know him better when I went over to India. But he is he's a writer, director, producer in Bollywood. And so like what he does is storytelling. Like that's what he's really good at. And one thing he mentioned, he was like, dude, if I'm running the APP, I'm like giving bonuses for players to break their paddle. Like you need more characters and more personalities. And he's absolutely right. Like that's why Tyson's done such a good job of making a name for himself. Right. That's why you have like Tommy Paul giving him a shout out. And not other people, right? Like, so Tyson's done an incredible job at kind of, you know, crafting that persona. And it is him. Like Tyson's Tyson. Like, it's really not a show. Like, it's who he is, which is what makes it so great.
He looks much different than when I first met him, but
yeah,
he's still pretty much the same guy in terms of personality. Yeah. He was always like that. I'll give him that.
Always incredibly high energy. Great work ethic. And all, like the one thing that I like about Tyson is that he remembers everybody's name, dude. And like, that's like one of the most impressive skills to me is like, he'll teach a camp from somebody like in 2017, and they'll come up to him at a tournament now and he'll be like, oh, Barbara, how are you? Haven't, you know, you've been doing all right. It's like, those people skills are impressive stuff. So always give props to him on that.
I don't know how people do that. I can't get away from the handshake dump. Like I just can't stop it. And I'm very
conscious of it too. Yeah.
I'm very self-aware about it. I know it's an issue and I still cannot do it. But I think that's very true. And Tyson, incredibly consistent performer, incredibly consistent throughout his entire career, but I'm just not quite sure he's in the very elite tier of talent yet. He might be number one in terms of notoriety and people knowing him and the brand. And man, some of these men's doubles matches, even that little bit I saw of you guys yesterday, a lot of middle dinking, a lot of plain points and a lot of non-emotion, especially from the other side of the net. And along with, Colin and his brother, some of those matches, I'm on the edge of my seat, but how can a casual fan be on the edge of their seat in some of these situations? I don't know, Robert. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It goes both ways. Cause like there are quite a few casual viewers that like aren't necessarily good pickleball players or even like avid pickleball players. Some had never even played before that were at Lone Palm, the place we were playing. And there's a good crowd, dude. It was a solid crowd of, I don't know how many people, but there is tension. There were tension at tension during the points. Like you could hear like oohs and ahs. Like, so that does lend itself to maybe because it's in person, right? And people know that the points are big and it's match point, all the stuff. But even then, like there was some of the you could feel it. You could feel the tension, and it was a good viewing experience, I think, for the people that were there. But again, getting that to translate on TV or a live stream is a different story, and I don't think we have it figured out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about these two things real quick.
Yep.
Shot clock.
Yep.
Extending the net posts. Those are the two main things that I've heard in terms of spicing it up. And I don't know if it would be returning or serving team, maybe serving team. You got like a 20-second shot clock, big clock in the back. If the point does not end and you run out of time, the serving team would lose or possibly the returning team, whatever.
Yeah.
And then extending the net post, knifing more dink, spreading people out wide, not being able to give up as much ATPs that can create some more offensive opportunities in a variety of ways. What do you think about those two?
Yeah, I think extending the net post, no. Just think like outside of just thinking about it from like a purely competitive like playing standpoint, I think just like the like infrastructure around what would need to change just would be impossible to make it happen, or not impossible, but just not feasible to change all the courts we have built and the nets and extend them, and like it's just doesn't seem reasonable. So we can nix that one, I think. In terms of the shot clock, I like it, dude. And I have no problem with different formats. Like I just learned about cricket from Yuvi, who we'll have on here in a couple minutes. In India, when I was there, I would watch, he was teaching me all the rules, and I was like, I actually got really into it and started understanding it. And it's a really fascinating game of all the, you know, the technicalities and the details and the skill and the strategy around it. And they have different formats. They have something called, and I'll probably mess this up, but they have like a T20, which is like a shorter game. They have a T50, which is a like kind of like a longer game that would probably take 7-8 hours, something like that. And then they have an even longer one that could last several days. So I think there's nothing wrong with having, and the difference between those is, the long games you play more conservatively, the shorter games like the T20, you need to put up more points, so you play more aggressively. And we can have UV update, like if I'm totally off base on this, but I think that I'm pretty sure that's how it is. So I see no issues with having different formats of like, I think the long extended dink rallies, you know, for me, I love watching it. I love seeing like where they're trying to move the ball and like, what's the strategy, what spots are you trying to hit to get them off balance? And I think to like the avid player and the avid watcher, that's also very interesting. But at the same time, to kind of get new eyeballs and new interests, I love the idea of a shot clock. I love the idea of, you know, whatever, call it, I don't know what it would be, a 25 second, 30 second, whatever, but you have to pull the trigger. You have to at least start a speed up, right? And then if a reset happens, the shot clock resets or something. I don't know, but I think that would be a lot of fun, and it would cause excitement every single point. So I'm on board.
And you don't, like you said, you don't have to do it every time.
Yeah.
So maybe you have a certain level of tournament that is, you know, standard format, and then you have, yep. Whatever, or possibly, yeah. So, Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think most people don't want, we know that they don't want to change. They don't like change, you know, especially, yeah. you know, some of the competitors and the people that are doing this for a living, but we just, you got to be flexible. I mean, you know, numbers don't lie. If we need to get to a certain amount of viewership or we need to, you know, figure something out to make the game a bit more exciting to the casual fan, then this is the situation we're in. So, you have to keep an open mind. I think
that feels like a good compromise. Is like, hey, MLP, let's go back to side out scoring, but have a shot clock. I'm in.
Okay. You heard it here. Well, we'll be shot clock, MLP. We'll be moving indoors for every tournament. Rob's got pickle figured out. We need someone listening to you, Rob.
Well, let's perfect segue. UV's listening to me. He knows about indoor pickleball. So let's add UV to the stage right here. UV. What's
hey
up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Hey, Adam.
What's up? You've been a while since. Where were we? We were down close to Naples.
Sanibel Island. That's right. Was a fantastic experience. This was, I think, back in early 2021. I attended the Simone Jajim camp down in beautiful Sanibel Island. And we had the wonderful Adam Stone and Deckelbach combo over there, teaching us some good pickles. So throwback to that good time.
I mean, you signed up for the Simone camp and you got the real headliner teaching you right here. So let's be clear about that.
The only good tips I remember were from my boy Stoney over here. So,
that's right. I remember that lefty forehand, UV. I remember.
Yeah, Rob knows all about it as well. We had him over in Mumbai, India. And I showed him a thing or two he hadn't seen before. So,
ooh, I like that.
Hey, it's a fact. It's just a fact.
Yeah. You know, I like to get slippery with that forehand on the court. Mm-hmm.
I will say, UV, from we connected last year in New York during the APP New York Open with Eric Ho,
yep,
Mr. NYC Pickleball, and from playing with you then to playing with you now, you've gotten significantly better. Significantly.
Thank you. I've been putting in the work, so I'm glad that it shows.
Yeah, and I want to give everybody some context around you, UV. So you were amazing enough to host me in Mumbai when I came over for the clinics and camps. You have lived in the U.S. for the past 7 years, really. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep. Cool. Yep.
And then moved back in May.
That's right.
April, yep. May. Okay. Just to, with the pure focus and goal of, obviously you grew up in Mumbai, family is well established in business there. But your focus really is on growing the sport in India. You've kind of seen everything that's happening in the US, and obviously the Indian market is gigantic, and you want to kind of bring back pickleball to India and give back and make this sport really accessible to India, which is amazing. So I want you to share a little bit about what you have going on over there and what your plans are.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I was living in the US for the past 7 years. I was most recently in Dallas, Texas. And in fact, Rob and I reconnected there as well at Tom Dundon's house. We were getting some good games with Riley and the whole Dallas pickleball crew.
Jack Sock was there too, I think.
Jack Sock was there too. Yeah, we had some great games. I always wanted to get involved in the pickleball space, but I was finding it more competitive over here in the US, since there are so many big players when it comes to equipment distribution or the tournaments or when it comes to indoor facilities. I would just be one of the many kind of players in the game, and that was deterring me from kind of getting involved. But, you know, after talking things over with my family, they were finally open to the idea of me moving back to India purely to grow the sport of pickleball. And that's something that I was really wanting to do for a long time. So I finally moved back to Mumbai in May of 2023 with the sole vision of just spreading the love and joy that is pickleball to all my fellow Indians. And it's been about 5-6 months now, and things have been going really well. Let me tell our audience here a little bit about kind of the pickleball happenings in India and where we're at, both on the business and the recreational side. So I moved back, and I also moved back to play some pro pickleball. So you're actually talking to the number one ranked player in India. Let's go, UV.
Let's go, UV.
Absolutely. Been rocking the pro pickleball circuit back in India and Asia as well, which has been really cool. But apart from that, I invested into this company, Global Sports. Rob might have mentioned it. And basically, Global Sports is like Pickleball 360. We handle everything. But our real bread and butter is the big pickleball tournaments that we kind of put up. So we had one big one in May with about 500 participants. And the cash prize was about $20,000 split across all events. And then we had another big one about 2 months ago, which is powered by the APP, which is really cool because we had it streamed on the APP live stream and we got some viewers for that, which was really nice. And that was, again, about $25,000 cash prize, around 600 participants. And apart from these big tournaments that we put up, we also have about 20 or so courts under management in the Mumbai area that we're looking to grow. We are distributing equipment and we're in talks with some of the big players to kind of push their equipment, balls, paddles, bags, that sorts of things. And we also have a great coaching program. So we offer coaching for beginners all the way to aspiring pros. So yeah, that's pretty much kind of what's going on in Global Sports. And it's a really exciting time. Pickleball is a big buzz back in India because, you know, it's easy to play, accessible for people of all ages. So it's definitely on the uprise. And having Robert in Mumbai surely helped push things along with just people seeing kind of what like the top talent looks like and just being really motivated and excited about pickleball.
Yeah, and I was super impressed with the level of play, especially from some of the young guys. Yeah, I mean, you have some 11, 12, 13, 14 year olds that are, I mean, they're going to rival anybody in the U.S. right now, I think, in terms of talent and ability and skill. I still think Veer is going to be like, he's what, 11? I think, yeah, I still think he might be the number one 11 year old in the world. Like, he's so good.
Yeah, definitely. He's got game and he's got heart too. He's gritty. He'll run every ball down. He's scrappy and he wants it. So that's always a good thing to have. But yeah, as you mentioned, another thing that kind of Global Sports does is we sponsor a bunch of players who we believe have talent and kind of can take their game to the future. So we've invested in kind of our next gen talent, which are all the young guns trying to improve their game. And that's a big part of what we do, which is kind of building our pro talent. And hopefully we're kind of in the works of having a league thing going, something similar to MLP back in India in some time. Because I don't know if you guys know, but leagues sell big back in India. We have something called the IPL, the Indian Premier League. It's for cricket. And it's actually one of the biggest franchises in terms of leagues in the whole world. So it's really exciting stuff.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, yeah, and I know cricket number one in India, but tell me a little bit about some of the racket sports that are very popular in India. I'm sure I think badminton and a variety of other ones, as that kind of is a little bit more of a segue into pickleball.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, what I saw here in the US when it came to players transitioning into pickleball, I'd say it was predominantly tennis, like especially at the higher level. If you're seeing kind of any players come over to pickleball, they definitely have somewhat of a tennis background. It's a little bit different in India. Of course, we have quite a few people playing tennis, but I'd say the two most common racket sports you see is, as Adam mentioned, badminton. And then the second one being table tennis that some people call ping pong over here. So those two are the like really common sports where you see people transitioning over. And it's actually really cool to see like how people's games differ coming in from different racket sports. So obviously from tennis, you see people with like the big volleys and the big ground strokes. But when you see people coming in from badminton and table tennis, you see a little bit more wrist. You see more wrist action. Yeah, they love to get wristy. They love to like whip the ball around, sometimes a little bit too much. And Rob had to like kind of tell some of the students, like, you know, lock that wrist, lock that elbow. But yeah, so big on the table tennis, big in badminton, coming in a pickleball. And they got that wrist flick, man. So watch out, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, if you can't control the wrist, you better lock it in pretty good. But if you can, you can get some special stuff out of that strength from the forearm and wrist. So the only person I can really think of is Hendry Winarto.
And I knew that was coming.
That was many years ago, but that's the only high-level badminton player. So I would really like to see a couple kind of transition over and what kind of special things they can do to the pickleball that maybe some of us tennis players cannot.
Absolutely. I've played with Henry as well back in Clear One, back in the day in Orlando, and absolutely disgusting wrist flick and incredible drop shot as well. You know, like he holds the paddle out in the backhand and he might just murder the ball and he might just drop shot it. You never know. So that was something special.
Yeah, he was wildly talented. Is wildly talented. Hey, Yuvi. So I think a lot of people don't understand kind of the international scene in terms of open pro events. And like, so the guys that are in India, like when I got there, quite a few are coming back from Taiwan to play a tournament. So, I mean, these guys are playing like a pretty normal schedule. Like they're playing Taiwan. I know Yuvi is going to go to Houston. So it'll be awesome to see him there. And are you going to make it up to MLP, Yuvi?
No. So I'm actually flying back to India because, as you mentioned, like all of us, like pros playing even outside of the US, we have such a big schedule now, like especially the Indians who are taking it seriously. I'm actually flying to Dalian, China, November 9th to 12th to play a World Pickleball Championship event that's run by Jan Papi.
Jan Papi.
That's
Jan's taken his show on a show to Asia, Adam.
He's always been the international guy. Five years, six ago, Jan Papi. You might forget about him for a little bit, but he pops right back in there. So
Adam, what is he?
He's an idea man. I mean, Jan Papi, he's an idea man. I mean, that's clear that he's an idea man.
He's definitely making some money moves on the east side of the world in Asia and stuff like that. He has this company, World Pickleball Championships, which is essentially, he has like a couple of events every year. He had a big one in Bali, where we actually had like about 50 or so Indian players go there and play. And there were 800 participants. We had all the top players from Australia. We had Louis Leville, number one player from the UK. He was my partner for men's doubles for that tournament. And we came home with the silver in men's doubles open, which was kind of nice. But which something that we're really proud of was in that final, I actually played my friends from Mumbai. So you had like three out of the four finalists in men's doubles open from Mumbai, India, at a big international tournament where you had like all the top players from Taiwan, from Asia, Indonesia. So that was a good tournament, and it was a Jan Papi tournament. So we got to see the man in action.
Yeah, but you said it earlier. I mean, maybe not saturated, but getting there in the U.S. with it, not just apparel, paddles, tournament, the whole shebang. So why not go somewhere else who has a very quality population? They're into the sport, but maybe doesn't have the infrastructure, whatever that may be, and kind of start it up from there. India is a great option, and I'm sure there's a couple other ones as well. I'm all about the international.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a really exciting time. I think pickleball has finally broken through into other countries. I was talking to my friend Louis, and it's really picking up over there. Obviously, Robert went for the English Open, and I think that had over 1,000 participants. And then, honestly, I've been hearing some pretty crazy stuff happening in China. Like, it's so crazy that I don't even know if it's true. But a buddy of mine told me, because I asked someone, like, hey, you know, where were all the Chinese players in Bali? Because you had Taiwan, you had Indonesia, you had all these other Asian countries kind of competing. But we didn't have anyone from China over there. So I kind of asked, like, what's going on? Because I expected them to make a good run. And my buddy told me that China right now, they are pretty serious about pickleball. And they're actually training some of their players as well. They have separate training for like their table tennis converts, their badminton converts. So like the training is looking a bit different. And these guys are going so serious that they're not even going to compete in any of the tournaments for the next 3 to 5 years. They're just sitting and grinding and training every day. Like apparently you're not even allowed to post videos. So the world is not allowed to know yet, like kind of where the China talent is. And then one day when they're ready, they're just going to come and like take over the show. That's what I heard. I don't know how much merit there is to it, but I found that kind of crazy.
Yeah. I've never been to China, but I feel like that's a Chinese thing to do. They have their, I love how they have a specific teacher for whatever sport you converted from to teach a specific way and then just take the sport by storm. I love it.
Exactly. I think we're going to have to ask Lee Whitwell at some point, kind of what's happening over in China. She has firsthand knowledge. I think she was over there to do some duper related stuff. So we might have to ask her.
She only saw what they wanted her to see.
That's good.
But Yuvi, just to kind of wrap it, you guys have a big initiative coming early next year, February Indian Open. It's got to be the largest prize money event outside the U.S. ever. Correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So Global Sports, the company I invested in, we're putting together the Indian Open February 8th to 11th. And this is one you guys are not going to want to miss. We're talking the big bucks, the glam show. It's over $100,000 USD cash prize spread across all events. And it's actually powered by the APP. So Shashank, my partner, and I, we've been in talks with Mike Politsky. I think he's the head of APP. He actually flew down to Mumbai for our last event, the Monsoon Pickleball Championships, about 2 months ago. And he was just really impressed with the whole landscape of kind of where pickleball is at in India. He really liked the talent level. He liked how kind of Global Sports was putting together the event. It kind of almost matched some of the US standards. So yeah, coming back to the Indian Open, it's February 8th to 11th in my hometown, Mumbai. So apart from good pickleball, I'll be showing all you guys a great time as well.
And South Bombay.
South Bombay, and it's over $100,000 cash prize, and I'd love to take you over like some of the formats and stuff a little bit, just so that everyone can know kind of how the brackets and the formats kind of differ a little bit from the US, but still has a lot of the same stuff going on. So one thing when I moved back that I found really interesting is that the 35 plus bracket is really popular in India. I think it's really popular all over because you have so many players in like their 40s and 50s playing pickleball at a high level. But what's kind of interesting is that back in India, the way my partners Global Sports, we do the events, is that there's actually a 35 plus open bracket as well. So there's the normal open bracket, but then there's also a 35 plus pro open bracket. And we're actually talking like with good prize money and as well. So for the normal open pro, which is you have the youngsters playing in that, the cash prize for say a men's doubles open at the Indian Open is about $4,000. The same for mixed doubles, same for women's doubles. We're talking roughly around $4,000 if you come first place. And for men's and women's singles, it's around $2,500, or it could be close to $3,000. But then you also have the 35 plus open bracket. And this is going to be happening at the Indian Open as well, where we're paying out around $1,000 if you come first place in the 35 plus open men's doubles or women's doubles. So there's a serious chunk of change kept out for that 35 plus bracket as well, which is kind of interesting. I don't know how I felt about that, just because I kind of lived here in the US and kind of saw how things were playing out on the APP and the PPA. But it really is selling from a business point of view and from an organization point of view in terms of people entering the tournament and creating buzz. So that's something that's kind of we do differently back in India. And then the second thing, we have a unique format. We're kind of testing it out. Is we have somewhat like a team format. It's not exactly that, but we're actually selling teams. We're selling 16 teams for $10,000 a pop. So anyone who wants to own a team can go ahead and purchase an open team for $10,000. And the format is that you have four players on your team and you can choose to have one substitute. It's three men and one female. Now, what's unique about this format is that the team owner can go ahead and pick any four or five players that he likes. So there's no really draft for this event. And it's just like a one-time thing. It's not a league where kind of your team ownership carries on into future events. You just $10,000, You get a team for this one event. You can choose to put your team together of whichever men and women that you like. It's three men and one woman. And then you go out and compete. You play two men's doubles, one men's singles, and one mixed doubles event, MLP style. And then if it's 2-2, you go into a dream breaker. And then at the end, we pay out about 20-something thousand dollars for first place, $15,000 or $13,000 for second place, and then third place gets a payout as well. So, you know, if people are feeling confident, they think they can put together the best team, come on out to Mumbai, India, and let's compete. So it should be really fun. We're going to have a lot of the APP players over there. So I think we'll have a couple of strong APP teams. We'll have a couple of strong Indian teams over there. One of the big reasons we're doing this is to kind of get more corporate attention. That's something that Global Sports is really trying to focus on, is kind of bringing the big corporates into pickleball. And we're hoping that this little tester event that we're doing will help with that. So
I love it, man. I think you guys are going to kill it in February. And I think you're proven a lot of things in terms of being able to get sponsorship dollars. You guys have a lot of connections through the Bollywood business side of things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be a 3-4 day festival, and get to Mumbai, South Bombay, baby.
South Bombay. That's the place you want to be, February 8th to 11th. And Adam, so we're actually in looks for a top commentator as well. So if you're interested, that's something we could definitely explore. We could get on a call at some point.
A little 35 plus, a little commentary.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I understand. I am a commentator now, but you're speaking my language 35 plus there. I mean, I'm tired of playing all these damn J.W. Johnsons and whatever the heck else. Put me in that 35 plus bracket. I got a shot.
Absolutely. And, you know, now that you mentioned that, we actually have, since I told you 35 plus is such a big deal, the Indians, Global Sports, we love our 35 plusers. Come on, win some money in 35 plus open. So we actually have a team event for 35 plus as well. It's $3,000 for a team. And then the payout is accordingly as well. So it's not as much as the open payout, but you could get into some team event action as well, Adam. I think we got a lot of stuff for you going on. We'd love to have you in Mumbai. So we should talk about that.
Send me a message. Let's make this
happen. Let's make it happen.
Adam, you want to go? I promise you. You need to go.
I've never been before. I'm all about it. I've only been to South America and Europe, so I got to get over to Asia. I am absolutely all for it.
Done. All right. Well, thank you, boys. Let's wrap it. UV, you're the man. Excited for everything going on in India. And Adam, let's talk. Let's do this again next week, maybe.
Thank you guys for having me on the pod. I just want to say it's an absolute honor to be on the number one pickleball podcast in the game with the boys, Rob Nunnery and Adam Stone. So thank you so much for having me on, guys. And I'll see you at the Indian Open.
That's right. Sir. All right. Later, boys.